If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home.
Hello there, welcome to episode 53 of the Power Slam podcast with me, Finlay Martin, and the man who brought me into the Inside the Ropes fold 1 year ago this week. He's my benefactor, he's also my friend and yours. Here's Kenny. How are you doing, Kenny?
I need to do an introduction.
This, you know, it's a milestone for me to get to introduce one of these podcasts. And I hope I did you justice there, Kenny.
I mean, it would bring tears to a glass eye. Do you know what I mean? It will never be, you know, on a week where I, you know, got all of my Power Slam magazines from home and finally got them over to my flat and stuff. It is not lost on me, the irony. You know, I remember sitting reading in 2014 the last issue of Power Slam, and you know, because you didn't make a big deal out of it. You just kind of very quietly, you know, shut up shop. And yeah, now we're 4 years later and we're doing this, and it's mad, but it's very fun. And I think that, I think we're like a fine wine. We're getting better with age in this podcast, Finn.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, as I always say, you know, if people think there's things we should be doing or things we should be talking about or things we shouldn't be doing, then please let us know. You know, we are all ears.
Unless, obviously, we think you're wrong, in which case we'll just continue doing what we're doing. But we will read what you say.
Exactly. Like most people in wrestling, we'll just ignore you anyway because we know best.
Exactly. So, yeah, so it's been a year of doing these podcasts. Very, very fun. You know, we've... So, obviously, now we do the stuff on Patreon as well, where Finn and I do an overrun every week. Finn does articles for us, whether it's the Wrestling Roundup or it's, you know, Tell Me I Didn't Just See That, and all these kind of things. But we are, Finn, I guess this is the time where we announced that we're actually going to be doing some more stuff for people later on this year. So we looked at it and we were thinking, you know, all the stuff that we do. And obviously Sandra and I do the Retro Raw podcast. Every week we cover Retro Raw. So starting on August the 2nd, 2018, there is going to be a, you know, kind of short, maybe 20 minutes tops kind of podcast going out once a week, Retro Heat, where Finn and I are going to go back and review Sunday Night Heat. And we're probably going to do it for about a year, because after that point, SmackDown starts, so there's really no point in covering Heat after that. But Finn, Heat was a big show back in 1998 when they kind of brought it into the fold. It was the second show behind Raw, but you had the main event players showing up on that show.
You did do. I mean, it was huge. It was a little bit like WCW Thunder at the beginning. That was really big as well. And that sadly just tailed off and the big stars couldn't be bothered to work it anymore. But with Sunday Night Heat, yeah, it was huge. I mean, there were episodes where major angles took place and it was like a must-see show. And it was drawing, I mean, let's face it, WWF back then had the Midas touch. And they were drawing enormous ratings and people thinking, oh, there's not room for another TV program. No, there's no way people are going to tune into that. And he, in many ways, was a precursor for SmackDown. They're like, hang on a minute, people will watch this show. So maybe they'll watch another midweek show that's over 2 hours. And of course, it turned out to be the case. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to doing the reviews. It was a crazy time for the WWF. And I think it'd be fun going back and revisiting it each week, Kenny.
Yeah, because also, I don't know about you, but I never really got to see those episodes because it wasn't on in the UK. In the UK, we didn't get Heat until January of 2000 when Channel 4 got the deal with WWF. So it was one of those weird things where we kind of had to just watch the highlights on Raw. I mean, I don't know if maybe you were getting sent some of the stuff.
Okay, yeah, I would get sent tapes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would be sent WCW pay-per-views on VHS, and yeah, you would be sent TV programs as well, because I mean, there was stuff that you needed to see in order to write about it. So yeah, I remember watching quite a lot of the episodes, and on most of the episodes, actually, I can't really remember. It'll all come back to me, I'm sure, when we're doing the when we're revisiting it.
I mean, obviously part of the impetus of this is because Heat's now on the network, and I was also kind of thinking with Sean, I was like, we kind of have to talk about Heat because it's too big for the first year to ignore, but at the same time, it's like, you know, there's only so much retro WWF that we can put Sandra through, so I thought Finn and I could probably offer something different on that. But the one thing that I've never seen, I mean, I've seen like tiny bits of it, but I've never really heard that Shane McMahon character on commentary. I've heard that he's atrocious. So I'm looking forward to seeing just how bad Shane McMahon was in those first few months when he was all of a sudden a commentator in the WWF.
Yeah, I seem to remember it being like there was like Wayne's World references and stuff, and you're thinking, hold on a minute, that came out like in 91 or something. It's like, what are you doing making Wayne's World references, things like that? You're like, it was excruciating at times. It really was.
To be fair, though, seven years after a pop culture thing, that's pretty much a McMahon way of doing things, right? That's exactly what you would get.
Probably just discovered it, yeah. No, in 98, they were pretty on the ball. I mean, I remember South Park, I think, did South Park come out in 98? I think it did. And I remember there was a lot of South Park references on WWF programming and on WCW programming. Must have been a terrible time for you, Kenny, being called Kenny when South Park first started.
Do you know what? I don't think I've ever said this on a podcast, but I hate South Park. And I've never watched it. And the reason is exactly what you just said, because I would just get, who killed Kenny? Who killed Kenny? Oh my God, he killed Kenny. All the time. I was just like, I'm not watching this shit. so I just have never been, it's been like a long-standing grudge. But I know that if that had never happened, I probably would have loved it. And I remember one of my friends got me, like, as a gift, the CD of, like, Chef from South Park singing about chocolate salty balls.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Was it Isaac Hayes, I think, did the voice for that, didn't he? Yeah,
so I have like very, very, very surface level South Park knowledge. So, WWF, and obviously, I mean, by the time I think that we watch Heat, I think the oddities will have just about appeared. And then obviously, one of the oddities carries around a Cartman plush.
That's right, yeah, that's right. I think it was it Golga, John Tenta's character, the mask character?
It was, yeah, and it's funny because, like, reading. Something I'm going to get to do now, kind of for every week that we do these shows, is that I'm going to get to read the Power Slam issue that we're going to talk about in the overrun, so I can ask Finn some questions and stuff. But I've been reading some of the Observers and stuff, and the discussion seems to be like, oh, you know, John Tenta, you know, formerly Earthquake, he's had his tryout, it's went really well, they're going to bring him in to be a top level heel to work with Austin, and then he just comes in like he's got some difficulties, shall we say. Yeah. And he also has like a medicine ball over his face.
But yeah.
I mean, yeah. What the fuck were they thinking, Finn?
Well, I mean, I think more it was, what the hell was anyone thinking, imagining that John Tenta could have been an opponent for Steve Austin in 1998. I mean, he had that run in WCW in late 94.
Listen, wait, he was a shark. He was an avalanche. You know, he's a man who can do any natural disaster for you. I mean, why he was not called Tornado in 1998, I don't know.
But I mean, obviously he had the great run in 1990 with the Hulkster, the famous match at SummerSlam 90, wasn't it?
That tremendous angle of the Brother Love show where he sits on Hogan and basically Hogan's dead for 3 months.
I mean, have you ever seen the famous John Tenta match with Koji Kitao?
No, which
turns into a shoot. Yeah, well, because you know John Tenta was a sumo wrestler for real, you know, in Japan. Yeah. And then he left sumo and entered pro wrestling. And he had a match, I think it was on a Super World Sports card. And Super World Sports had the deal with WWF in 91. Quite short-lived entity, Super World Sports, but they had huge money behind them. I think it was a Super World Sports show. It's worth checking out on YouTube. It's on there. And John Tenta and this Koji Kitao, who I believe was a former Yokozuna sumo grand champion. And Catal basically ended up having a tantrum in the middle of the match, stopped cooperating with Tenta, and the match turned into a shoot. And it is worth checking out. It's one of the weirdest things you'll ever see.
I need to see that. If anything that's stranger than Earthquake in a sumo outfit against Yokozuna, I'm up for checking out.
So, I mean, Tenta did have some respect. The fact that he kept cool and kept calm and just not much happened when the spirit of cooperation ended, but it's worth checking out. Everyone check that. If you haven't seen it, you need to watch that. It's just bizarre. So Tenta, you know, he came into WWF with some respect, you know, the fact that he had dealt with that situation and then had the match with Hogan, which was a huge success. And as you say, the angle on the Brother Love Show was I remember thinking, wow, even if you watch it now, it's one of those things that's probably not one that you would really want to revisit, because you can just see how naff the angle looks now. But at the time, because he didn't do angles that often, it seemed immense. And Hogan disappeared, went off to do, I think it was it Suburban Commando? I think it was. I think he filmed
one of the greatest movies you'll ever see. Hulk Hogan is an alien called Shep Ramsey, and he goes to live with Christopher Lloyd of Back to the Future fame, and Shelley, what's her name?
Is it Shelley Duvall?
Shelley Duvall from The Shining. Yep. I mean, you cannot fathom this movie. It's so incredibly bad. And then you've got The Undertaker in it as a hitman. It's just, I mean, it's, I can't say enough good things about it, Finn. If Hulk Hogan being sat on by Earthquake gave us Suburban Commando, then we should find a statue for Earthquake. You must have seen Suburban Commando, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I saw the movie at the time.
You sounded almost speechless there that I asked you about Suburban Commando. What do you think? Good? Bad?
I remember thinking that it was better than No Holds Bad. But then again, what isn't? So Hogan left, then came back for the match with the Earthquake, and that was huge. But his career really dropped off after that, the Earthquake, and they tried to recapture it in WCW. It didn't happen. He was seen pretty much as a relic then. So going back to the whole how anyone could, you know, possibly conceive of John Tenta as a viable opponent for Steve Austin with the way that Austin worked in 1998, it was just fantasy. So really, it's not that surprising that he ended up in a role like that. Very strange. You know, very strange that anyone could imagine. Because, I mean, Austin, you go back in 98, he had such a fast-paced style. And he wanted all of his matches to be as good as they could be. I mean, Tenta was not a guy at that point in his life who could have kept up with Austin. So, I mean, it was never going to happen.
The dream of Earthquake lives on. It's a shame, because when John Tenta sadly passed away, I think it was 2006 that he died. And it was of like cancer, and he was only 42. I think, yeah. Which, I mean, the idea that he was in his late 20s during that WWF run, I mean, it would mean that when he did the angle with Hogan, he would have been 26 years old.
Yeah, it is incredible, isn't it? I mean, it's like that one you've mentioned before, Barry Windham in 1998.
Oh, my God.
And you think, wow. You know, I mean, if you go back and look at his Widowmaker run, which I believe was 91, he looked pretty old then as well. And I think he was still in his early 30s at that point.
If somebody put you and Barry Windham from 1998 together and they said Finn's the younger brother, nobody would question it.
Well, my youthful good looks, Kenny.
It's all that walking. But before we move, because there's a lot of stuff for us to talk about this week. We've got the sellout of All In. We've got the WWE potential TV deal with NBC Universal. Lots of stuff. But before we do, I want to ask you, because you did tell me this off air and it just cracked me up. So have you got any plans for the weekend, Finn? Is there anything? How are you going to celebrate? You know, a full year here at Inside the Ropes, Power Slam podcast. It's all going well. People love it. Loads of people say that you're their favourite podcast on the Inside the Ropes channel. There must be something that you're going to do to celebrate this momentous occasion.
Well, I'm going to some gig tonight up at Williamson's Park in Lancaster, which is some drum and bass event. I'm not going to tell you the reason. I'm going to bore people with the details of why I'm going to this, but I am going for a reason. You know, it's to support a friend in his hour of need. And yes, I'm going to be listening to drum and bass. I detest that type of music. This event start. We're recording this podcast earlier today because this event starts at 5 p.m. Kenny, 5 p.m.
Jesus Christ! Well, no, I do want to. I'm trying to remember where you sent it to. Whether it was on Facebook or whether it was on. I think it was Facebook. So we'd agreed to record today, and that was all fine because I was in Newcastle yesterday doing some interviews. We got 20 minutes with Daniel Bryan that's going up on the YouTube channel soon. Really stoked about you guys getting to check that out soon. And Finn had messaged me to kind of say, you know, can we do it a little bit earlier, blah, blah. And then he said to me this sentence, which I just love. So he sent me a link to the event and he just wrote, "I detest dance music. It is to music what Cena is to wrestling." And I was in the middle of like a public place and I cackled so loud. Just because that's how you feel about dance music. I completely understand.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, the dancing's not intense enough. You don't believe it. The spots are too loud. You know, it's getting cold. They're calling the next dance move they're going to do. I'm with you.
Yeah, it's, you know, if other people like it, well, I'm going to be having to tolerate these people tonight. So, yeah, I'm doing it for the right reasons, so I'm going to go along. And then this weekend, I'm going kitchen detail again. You know, I think I told people about that 2 weeks ago, that we started moving the kitchen. Hopefully going to finish that on Saturday and Sunday. But at least it means that, it puts distance between me and the royal wedding, you know, which, you know, is not a bad thing.
Oh, who gives a fuck about that? Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, ugh. I was never more proud to be Scottish when there was an article in the BBC saying polls show that 3 out of 4 Scots don't care about the royal wedding. Like, yeah, pretty much. The Americans love it though, don't they? The Americans love it. They're all about the royals and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I do want to kick off by asking you about something because, you know, you actually, to be fair to you, you gave John Cena the benefit of the doubt, right? You know, he went through a very hard breakup with Nicole and all this kind of stuff. And then on Monday, he turned up on the Today Show.
Right.
And he basically was talking about how, you know, he loves her, she's the one for him, he now wants to have kids with her. And then he plugs her appearance on a show on Wednesday, which essentially means that this has been a work. And that we've all been worked about their breakup. And it is going to be channeled into a further season of Total Bellas. Not the season that's already been recorded where they break up. There will now be another one to document them getting back together.
The reunion,
the reconciliation. So I want to know, how does it feel, Finn, when you gave that man the benefit of the doubt? You put aside your thoughts about his skills as a professional wrestler. And you gave the guy the benefit of the doubt and he's worked you. How do you feel, Finn? You must feel betrayed.
I mean, it's like, who knows what's real and what isn't? I mean, we went through this in some detail. I mean, yeah, if I have been worked, if I have been, like, duped, if I have been taken as an easy mark by Cena, it's like, oh, what a fool I feel. I'm just going to go and sit in the corner and I'm just going to contemplate, you know, if my life even has any meaning anymore. You know, which I am feeling, knowing what's ahead of me this evening. But it's like, what's real and what's not in this? I mean, was the relationship, how much of that was real? And why would he suddenly say, oh, now I want to get married and now I want to have kids? And it's like, well, why would you announce that on TV? Why not tell Nikki that privately if this is something that you genuinely want to do?
I have the answer for you.
It's like this soap opera that is just writing as it goes along, or something that they just, the whole lives are on display and they don't know what is and isn't real. And I just find it all weird. It must be strange to live this life where everything's playing out in front of the cameras and you sort of, you must then yourself have trouble distinguishing between what's real and what's not. Anyway, you've got the explanation for this, Kenny. I'm all ears. Tell me.
He's a bastard. That's it. That's the end of it. No, but you know, fair play to them, right? Because I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I felt sorry for her. I even felt sorry for him. you know, and you know, and Sandra and I obviously did that, you know, mock podcast about where we basically reenacted the breakup scene, which, you know, we all do things for money. But now I don't feel bad about it. Now I'm going to promote the fucking thing. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where Sandra and I do some method acting and we act out the breakup between Nikki and John. And that seems to be a bit as realistic as the actual breakup, because they are back together, or will be. But
will be when the cameras arrive.
When the cameras arrive. Now, I do want to ask you a question, but before I do, I want to give you a warning. These dance events, Finn, right? I need to warn you this, because you don't go to a lot of dance music events.
No.
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things passed around at these events. You know, so if somebody comes up to you and they say they've got a Dolce Gabbana pill that's going to make you feel better, do not go near there, because you never know. So just, we don't want an inebriated Finn Martin on our hands. We do not need that. But what I will ask you...
Thanks for the warning, Kenny. Yeah. Thanks for the warning. I think when people look at me, they'll probably just pass and say, this guy doesn't look like he's having a good time, and no amount of drugs it's going to make any difference.
Oh God, I would love so much if, like, you know, you're like, oh, you know, fuck it, I'm just going to take something, and then one of the listeners is like, I just saw Finn Martin at his nut at a dance event. I mean, you would just never, you wouldn't be able to continue your life. You wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know what to do. Anyway, what I was going to ask you was, so, you know, you talked about John Cena and Nikki Bella and their sort of, you know, lives on display. Is there any price that would make you do a reality TV show?
Well, I mean, I think everyone has a price, don't they? I mean, everyone does. And unless you're so damn filthy rich, that money can make a difference. I think the answer is no, really.
I don't think you'd get picked up for a second season, though. It'd just be kitchen and bathroom developments the whole time.
No, I just don't really feel like my life would be interesting enough for one of these shows.
The thing is, if one of us did it, we'd need to make up fake house rules or something to make it interesting.
Well, that's it. I mean, I don't watch a whole lot of reality TV, if I'm honest. And this is, you know, an admission right now. But my other half, she's a huge fan of The Real Housewives of Cheshire. So I sit through
What? There's one called The Real Housewives of Cheshire?
That's right, it's on ITVB. I believe it's ITVB's biggest show. It's on like twice a year. And it's just one of the wackiest things ever. And you think, well, how much of this is real? And you kind of think, well, some of it probably is, but a lot of it isn't. And they follow a similar format each week. I was going to write a piece one time on my website about the similarities between an episode of The Real Housewives of Cheshire and a pro wrestler. There is some similarities there, but anyway, I never got around to it. I was probably writing something inside the ropes at that point. Or
that's
trying
true.
Trying to finish this smoking book I've been on with for a year. So.
I thought for a second that you were just like not hip with the kids anymore, and you thought that ITV2 was called ITVB. But no, you are. There is actually a channel. But just, I have looked this up. It's now in its seventh season, and the synopsis says, set in Cheshire's famous golden triangle of Wimslow, Alderley Edge and Prestbury, this reality show charts the everyday lives of a number of wealthy female residents, including Dawn Ward, Lauren Simon and Tanya Bardsley. The series documents the ladies' lavish lifestyles as they attend glamorous social events and deal with issues in their personal and professional lives. Although the cast often seems like a close-knit network of friends, clashing egos and short fuses mean drama and some heated arguments are never too far away.
That's it. They always have lots of drama. They save the drama for about the last, you know, after the final break, that's when the programme enters the danger zone. And you know that there's always going to be a big blow up. And there always is. Just in that last sort of 6 or 7 minutes of the show. And it's like, oh, we've got to tune in next week. So that's about the only reality TV show that I watch that I have to sit through. And it is ludicrous. It really is.
Do you find yourself at the end of an episode going, I do kind of want to see what happens, though. Like, you end up sucked in.
No, not really. It's just like one of these things that I sort of have to sit through, and that's that. So, that's about the only reality show that I'll watch on a regular basis. And I would not like my life to be the centre or the focus of one of those programmes. Thank you.
I do want to.
Nor is it ever likely. Nor is anyone ever likely to ask me to bring the cameras into my house and film it. So it's not really going to happen anyway. But I just think there's a certain type of people who like, who are good in that environment, who want to be in that environment, and I'm not one of those people.
Well, I was going to say to you, I mean, this Sunday is the season premiere of Total Bellas. So maybe we get you to check it out and we talk about it next week.
Oh, right. Yeah, no problem. I'll do that. Yeah,
Maybe that's... Now, I also love the idea that we're like, it's the one-year anniversary show. People are like, oh, this is going to be the greatest episode of the PowerSlam podcast ever. What we've covered so far, Earthquake, Suburban Commando, John Cena's House Rules, and The Real Housewives of Cheshire. And we're 25 minutes in.
I think we better get on to the wrestling, Kenny, before everyone just turns it off.
I think people will be enjoying it. So let's kick it off, though, with one of the big news. It was news that came out of the Hollywood Reporter. Did a story saying that NBC Universal have reached a deal to retain Raw when the current contract expires in October of 2019. He claims that WWE were asking for triple its current $160 million price tag for Raw and SmackDown, and that basically NBC are going to offer something between $240 million just for Raw. So they want to keep Raw. They're not that bothered about SmackDown, which would mean that NBC would keep Raw and then SmackDown would be shopped around to other networks. What do you make of all this news? What should we be thinking about it, and kind of unpack it for us a little bit?
I mean, I think what hits me is that it just shows you how far WWE has come as a TV property. I mean, in years gone by, I'm sure you remember this, Kenny, when the contract was coming up for renewal, there would often be fears that the rights fees would decrease, or maybe the channel would not renew and they would have to then shop it around a lesser channel.
Well, they famously left the USA Network to go to TNN, didn't they? Because that was more money.
That's right, yeah, that would have been back in late 2000, wasn't it? That was basically the death knell, wasn't it, for ECW?
Yeah. It was September 2000 they debuted on TNN.
That's right, yeah. So there was in years gone by, there was, and then I think the move came back to USA in 2005, I believe it was. Was it the Homecoming show?
October 2005 they came back.
That's right, because then they got the Saturday night's main events as part of the deal, and people were thinking, oh, wow, this is great. They're going to be back on network TV, and they absolutely bombed. But as part of that new deal, I think they lost out on quite a lot of advertising revenue. So I think the deal did have pluses, but also there were quite a few minuses as well of that particular deal that they closed to go back to USA. So they've been with the channel ever since. And now Hollywood Reporter is suggesting that they're going to get huge increase in fees, which is great for WWE. NBC Universal, they've said that they don't want SmackDown, but SmackDown, because that's also a success, is expected to get picked up by another channel, also with a huge rights fees. So, I mean, I think we said a few weeks ago that WWE was likely to be on course to have its most profitable year ever. I know this pertains to 2019, when the new deal will start. But, I mean, it's more really good news for WWE as a business, you know. I mean, look at the stock price. I mean, it closed yesterday at, I think, was it $50.31? A new record by a considerable margin. Just shows you huge confidence in WWE right now as a business. Huge confidence.
Yeah, and I think the stock last week or the week before was it $40? So, I mean, the one downside to them staying with USA is Raw is going to stay 3 hours. There's no way they're going to pay them more money to drop an hour. It's just not going to happen.
No.
But that's really the only downside. That was my main reason why I wanted it to go somewhere else, because I just, the 3 hour Raw kind of does my head in a little bit, but.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would be a better show as a 2 hour show for sure. But I mean, they're going to go where the money is, and that rights fee is going to increase.
Everybody now is operating on the assumption that more is more. You know, so I mean, what I would like to see them do, and I don't know how feasible this is, but like the first hour of Raw, like could it be something else? Like, could it be something that like. It's part live, it's part backstage, but it's not Raw, if that makes sense. Like, something where you kind of... it means that if you wanted to just tune in for the 2 hours of Raw, you could. But there's also something else where it would get a decent amount of viewers, but it would... It's not. It doesn't mean you have to watch it, because at the moment you can end up, you have to watch the 3 hours, and you sit through so many recaps of the same thing you've watched. So I don't know if there is anything they could do that way, but it would be. I think it's just me holding blind hope here at this point.
I can't see how they could, because NBC Universal would be buying Raw. It's Raw that they want, and it's Raw that they're selling adverts for. It's Raw that the sponsors are spending money on. So it's Raw. I mean, if they're then creating like the equivalent of a kickoff, of say a Raw kickoff or something like that, or they're bringing, say they put 205 Live on prior to Raw for the first hour, that would then just be seen as something that people, nowhere near as many people would watch, only the diehards, and it wouldn't command the advertising revenue, wouldn't command the sponsorship, and it just wouldn't be what NBC Universal is buying, which is a 3 hour Raw. So I think we're stuck with it, Kenny. Sorry to hit you with that one, but that's what NBC Universal's buying, and that's what WWE is going to have to deliver.
I know, you're right. But I guess the other thing is that it means now that TV is going to be much more worthwhile than like the network.
So, but it always has been. TV rights for dating back years.
Yeah, but I mean, if it's going to...
The number one revenue stream for WWE.
But, you know, it's even more now than ever, because, you know, now WrestleMania, which, you know, should still be in regular pay-per-view. But, I mean, I think what's going to be interesting going forward is that Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, Money in the Bank, SummerSlam and Survivor Series will always be treated as special, because they're, like, the big shows, right? They're, like, the big shows that you can... You know, there's a tradition with the you know, Rumble, Mania, Survivor Season, SummerSlam. Money in the Bank's kind of the fresh gimmick, so that's all going to be fine. But it wouldn't surprise me, like, if on a lot of the other pay-per-views that we start to see angles that finish shows that lead into Raw, because ideally they're going to want more. You know, if they've got 1.5 million?
Something like that, yeah.
Say, or say domestic North American viewers, they've got between 1 million and 1.5 million that are subscribed to the network. So say 1 million of those watch the regular pay-per-views. So Raw can potentially get 3 million, 4 million. So it feels like they're probably going to start doing stuff that's going to lead on to that rather than stuff that's going to lead on to the B pay-per-views. So I would imagine that like shows like Battleground and Extreme Rules and that kind of stuff, like they're probably going to become more disposable than they are right now. That's just probably where I would see it going.
Yeah, I can believe that happening. Yeah, I mean, you know, the TV, the more money that's coming in for TV, the more important that's going to get. I mean, things have sort of changed anyway. I mean, last year, I think, was in some ways to be a WWE fan, you were saying before, more is more. Well, sometimes less is more. And they gave us too many events last year, and some of them really didn't matter. You didn't really need to see them. And they have trimmed that back this year, which I think is good. And they're going to the dual brand events, which is good in a sense, although obviously Backlash was not a good start to that new era. So, I mean, I think they are trying to put more emphasis on the pay-per-views meaning something and being must-watches rather than being just another event that they're wheeling out. So I think they're doing that with pay-per-views. But you're right, sometimes, like I think last year, one example would be the women's Money in the Bank ladder match at Money in the Bank last year. The way that ended almost seemed like a way to promote SmackDown 2 nights later, didn't it?
Ellsworth
getting involved and stuff. And it wasn't really a conclusive finish to the match. Obviously, Carmella won, but then there was, you know, what's going to happen? And then Daniel Bryan put out the tweet saying, I'm going to address this on Tuesday. This is really a cheap finish. This is not on, blah, blah, blah. So it sort of seemed like it was done to promote SmackDown 2 nights later. So maybe we'll get more of that. I'm not sure what we're going to get. But it's a great time for WWE right now. Whichever way you look at it, it's a great time for WWE as a business. Sometimes when WWE is very, very, very successful, it's not such a great time to be a fan because they do start getting a bit cocky and they let things slide. And it's not as good as it can be because you know that they know it doesn't have to be. So that's the only fear of when WWE becomes ultra successful, is that, you know, they do... they do sort of take you for granted as viewers, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. One of the big news stories that's came out of WWE this week is they announced on Monday before Raw, and then they showed the footage from the NBC upfronts, that at Money in the Bank, we're going to see Ronda Rousey challenging Nia Jax for the Raw Women's Championship. It's been quite controversial from both sides. Some people are really digging the idea that this is going to match. Some people don't want to see it. What did you think when the announcement was made, and what are your kind of hopes and thoughts on the match?
I mean, when you think about it, WWE's put itself in a position where it doesn't really have anyone else lined up as an opponent for Nia Jax, because the Alexa Bliss feuds just really dropped off a cliff, a backlash. I'm not really sure what else they could have done with that. They don't really have anyone else lined up as an opponent for Ronda Rousey either. After the Asuka defeat, and obviously Charlotte, then they've been defeated by Carmella, and Charlotte's on the other brand. So they were really in a position where they had to do something with Rousey. I mean, you go back to WrestleMania, which was, that's 6 weeks ago now, and Rousey really hasn't done a whole lot since. I mean, she had that really hot angle with Stephanie McMahon the night after WrestleMania, but she's done very little since. So I think they were kind of thinking, we've got to do something with her. We've got to do something big with her. So let's book her in a match with Nia Jax. So I do get the thinking. I understand why they've done it. But I also believe that they're playing a dangerous game with her. I mean, Ronda's out there telling us that she wants to earn everything and prove herself. But what is happening contradicts her statements. She's being handed everything. I mean, it was Nia Jax that issued the challenge at the, was it the NBC Universal Upfront event, like a TV event that they were at?
Basically the kind of NBC Upfronts where NBC take their big shows and kind of, you know, bring some stars out. But there was a great moment very quickly, actually, where like Ronda and Charlotte or someone were talking, and then like two down from that was like Will and Grace talking, and it was just like, and there's a photo of Deborah Messing, who plays Grace in Will and Grace, like with a shocked look on her face, and she has a Raw Women's title in her hand, and I just thought, that's a crossover. I mean, that you could it would be great. But, you know, it's funny. I think something that people, and not a lot of people are picking up on about the angle they did, was when Ronda said, you know, well, look, I'm not ready for this. I need to, you know, it's not my time. You heard Charlotte from behind shouting, do it, do it.
Yeah.
Egging her on. And I think that's almost like a, you know, because obviously Ronda and Charlotte's going to be the money match down the road. And I mean, it feels to me like there's going to be an angle here in this match. And I kind of think you're right. I don't see when they announced the match, I was kind of like, fuck, that's a big match. I want to see that. I want to see what they do. And the idea is that, I mean, what else are you going to do with Ronda Rousey right now? Is she going to face Mickie James on pay-per-view? Like, I love Mickie James, but she's not a level of star that really right now in WWE would be an opponent for Ronda Rousey. So kind of, Ronda and I just kind of seems like the logical way to go.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, it didn't seem like they had a plan for her after the post-WrestleMania Raw. I mean, you know, Stephanie McMahon disappeared and there was no one waiting to take her place as Rousey's adversary. At that point, really, the WWE machine should have begun upraising someone, you know, immediately as a potential opponent for Rousey, so that she could gradually work her way up the ladder and she would be seen to have earned this potential title, you know, be seen to have earned a title match, which could have potentially happened at SummerSlam. So, I mean, that would be the traditional way of doing it, and that would be the way that I would have suggested that WWE do this. As I say, they're playing a dangerous game. If this is successful, and again, this all goes back to the mixed match. We had a lot of theories about what was going to happen, and the mixed match at WrestleMania was an unmitigated triumph. Absolutely amazing. To me, looking back on WrestleMania, it's the most memorable match of the night by a mile. So, I mean, she absolutely delivered on the night, and that match was incredible. So if Rousey versus Nia Jax is really good as well, no one will be saying afterwards, oh, what a dumb idea that was. When I say they're playing a dangerous game, you've got the potential of people maybe turning on Rousey and thinking, oh, she's jumped the queue here. You know, she doesn't deserve this. That's the only thing I'm worried about. And that's the last thing they want. They don't want her to get booed by fans who who think that she doesn't deserve it and that she's getting preferential treatment. The whole, you know, Dave Bautista in 2014 treatment, or the Roman Reigns 2015 to present treatment. So that's the only fear I have. I think the match will be good. I agree with you, Kenny. I think there'll be an angle. There'll be some type of non-finish. There's no, surely they're not going to give Rousey the belt this early. I just don't think they should do that, and I don't think they will.
But do you think that there's a, so say they do the match, right? They do Ronda and Nia, and there's some sort of angle, whether it's Stephanie or whether it's Natalia or whoever it is, and they do an angle and Ronda's unsuccessful. Is that the end of the world, that she has her first loss technically, or is it one of those things where it's like, well, you know, it's wrestling, and I mean, how important, I guess, is it for her to remain undefeated at this point? In your mind, is there anything that they could do that you kind of go, that's a death knell for Ronda?
Well, there are obviously many things that they could do that would be devastating for her, but I don't think they'll do any of those things. I think she'll be just paying her a lot of money. She's obviously, she is a top priority. There's her and Lesnar and a couple of others in that category, in the elite category of people that they want to look after. So I don't think they'll do anything in that match that's going to harm her. My fear is, will the fans reject her? Will the fans boo her? Will the fans dislike her? And I guess we'll see indications of that in confrontations, which presumably will happen on TV between now and June 17th. But I think the match will work, because I think she will. We saw how good she was at WrestleMania, and I think in time she could be one of the greats, Rousey as a performer. I think she absolutely gets it. I think there'll be some type of non-finish. It doesn't really matter if she loses, if it's caused by someone else, and if that then leads to her having a match with that person who she'll then defeat, which of course she will, to then lead her back potentially to a big match, as you say, with Charlotte, maybe later in the year, or WrestleMania next year, who knows, Royal Rumble maybe. So I'm not concerned about them screwing it up in that regard. I think they'll have a plan for her, and I think she'll be all right. My fear, as I've already said now numerous times, is the fans potentially rejecting her and starting booing her. And that's not what anyone really wants.
So I guess the next big thing to talk about is that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks put the all-in tickets on sale this past week. And the full 10,000 tickets sold out in 30 minutes. Were you surprised that they sold it this quickly? And what does it mean for wrestling in 2018? Like, is this just a one-off statement where it's like, you know, they want to, fans want to show WWE that there is an alternative and that they want to pack this arena? Or could this be something more regular? What do you make of it?
I mean, it's tremendous for these guys. Really, really good going. What was it? 29 minutes and 36 seconds. I think that's what.
Less than 29 minutes.
Yeah, and the event takes place September 1st at the Sears Center Arena in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, which I believe is about 25 miles, something like that, from Chicago, something like that.
Nothing's ever in Chicago. It's always in, like, Rosemont, or like, just that it's never in Chicago.
I can't remember what I've said about in the past. I think I said that I thought it would do well. I didn't think it would sell out all those tickets that quickly. I don't think anyone thought they would do that well. I mean, this is a testament to just how over these guys are. They've built their own audience, Cody Rhodes, Matt and Nick Jackson, the Bullet Club guys. They've created this fan loyalty. And we can all, Kenny, we can all learn from that. And fans are so into these guys that they're willing to support them with their spend money on it, not just by pressing follow on Twitter or like on Facebook. They're willing to support them financially, and they want them to succeed. And that there's just really testament to the strength of the bond between these guys and their audience. They've like created an audience for themselves. I mean, I was thinking about this, Kenny. You know, Smoky Mountain Wrestling never drew 10,000 fans. ECW never did. Extreme Championship Wrestling never drew 10,000 fans. If you look at like WCW, towards the end there. I mean, they were having trouble giving tickets away. I mean, obviously they drew well over 10,000 fans.
So I've got some stats on WCW where you bring it up. So the last time that WCW in the US were able to do that was Bash at the Beach 1999, where it was 11,397 paid in Fort Lauderdale, the show headlined by Randy Savage and Sid against Sting and Kevin Nash. And then they also did
awful show that was. Absolutely dismal.
1999 was my... I was out by that point. I couldn't do it. And then they also then did... November of that year, the WCW Mayhem, I think it was, the pay-per-view in Toronto.
Which yes, that did well.
12,119 paid for Bret Hart and Benoit for the WCW title. And then the only event in North America in the 2000s that's done it is on December 30th, 2001, Jacques Rougeau put on a show in Montreal that drew 12,000 fans, because, and the sell was, for the first time in decades, that all three Rougeau brothers, Jacques, Raymond and Armand, would be together as a team, and their dad was in their corner. So that's the last time that in America anything like that had happened.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredible, really. It just shows you how over these guys are. And just, as I say, the bond they've got with their audience, who are willing to support this venture financially. I don't know what it really means for wrestling on a whole. I don't know what we can read into that. All we know from this, what we can definitely ascertain from this, is that these guys have built up a real loyal audience that are willing to support them. I mean, not a single match has been announced, which is amazing. And we don't even know, apart from Cody and the Young Bucks, we don't even know who's going to be on the show, as far as I know, Kenny. Nothing's been announced yet, has it?
The only things that have been announced, I mean, they've announced that Rey Mysterio is going to be on the show. But, you know, Rey Mysterio's not, with all due respect to Rey Mysterio's not selling you out 10,000 tickets. You know, he's done so many shows now that he's kind of, you know, he's a great guy to have on the card.
He's like a nostalgia act, isn't he?
Yeah, and then something else they're doing, which I think is kind of going under the radar, but I actually think is going to be one of the best moments of the night, was Billy Corgan was there and announced the NWA World Championship will be on the line, and it's Cody Rhodes going to be defending, fighting for it. And I think there's just this kind of beautiful moment that they could have, where if Cody Rhodes, who is one of the men responsible for selling out this show, wins the belt that his dad used to hold.
Yeah.
There's like a really nice moment there to be had. And I think he'll win it. I think he is going to win it, because Cody Rhodes is the kind of guy who, and I know him, I've had many conversations with him in the past, and he's someone who wants, the thing with Cody Rhodes is he wants to better wrestling. He wants to leave wrestling better than he found it. And if he was to retire tomorrow, he's already done that. So I can't even imagine what he's going to do in the next couple of years. So I think a lot of it is fans who are, you know, I'm a WWE fan. I've always said that that's my thing. And I make no bones about it, but I'm so happy that these guys are doing it, because if they do this kind of thing, it might give WWE the kick up the arse to improve a little bit, or to do things a little bit better. It's just like World of Sport in the UK. It's like all this stuff going on. Like there's never really been, I said this on Twitter, there's never really been a better time to be a wrestling fan in the last 10, 15 years. Because now...
Yeah, I would agree, Kenny. I mean, there's so much stuff going on right now. There's so much stuff that's accessible. I mean, the UK scene's, I mean, just doing so well. And there's so much product out there. And really, if you're a fan, if you're not happy with what WWE is doing, then watch something else. There's so much else out there that you can support as a fan.
And the good thing is that they've, you know, now WWE have kind of got some actual competition in the two biggest markets. Because in North America, this all-in thing with ROH doing, you know, the best numbers they've ever done live shows, you know, I think they're pulling in 3,000 to 5,000 now, which was not what they were doing before. You've got New Japan who are coming to the States and drawing 5,000 people. You've got All In doing 10,000. And, you know, they sold out in 30 minutes. Could they have done 20,000? Maybe they could.
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, possibly. So, I mean, the thing is, they could always revisit it, can't they, the following year?
I mean, they're obviously going to revisit it. And I actually just want to say, because I when we were doing the Raw podcast this week, I kind of said, you know, people have been asking us, is our inside ropes going to be all in and that kind of thing? And I'd said, well, you know, the only way that's going to happen is if people get on social media. And every day I'm waking up to all these tweets, tweeting at Cody Rhodes and at Starcast and all that, saying we want inside ropes involved. All I can really say right now is the messages have been heard, and there are conversations taking place. That's all I can really say just now. So if any news comes up, I will be sure to say it. But again, that wouldn't have happened had everybody who supports Inside the Ropes not got on social media and got onto them and said, listen, we want them represented all in as well. So it really shows you that if you have people who follow you, who believe in you, then you can make things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but you know, whether Inside the Ropes is involved or not, I mean, I'm sure I speak for everyone. We wish them all the best, and they don't need our well wishes. These guys have made it happen for themselves. They're go-getters, entrepreneurs. I mean, they're just making it happen. And, you know, I've got nothing but respect for anyone who does that, whether it's in pro wrestling or anything else.
Yeah, 100%. And I would be amazed if this is not the first of, if this is the only all-in show, because they'd be mad to not do another one.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much they can do with this, and I'm sure they're not going to get carried away. But they could make this an annual event or maybe twice a year. I mean, you know, you just got to gauge the demand, which in this day and age is quite easy to do. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be further shows, and good for them. Yeah, I mean, I think I was saying, oh, maybe they won't sell 10,000 tickets, but maybe they'll sell 6,000, but they'll just, structure the seating so it won't look bad in the arena. And here they are. They sell the venue out in less than 30 minutes. So definitely underestimated the appeal of these performers they've got with their audience.
If you could see Finn right now, there is egg dripping off of his face.
Hey, there's a lot of times when it's really nice to be wrong, Kenny, and this is one of those times.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I'll be honest, in my head, I thought they would do it in the end. Like, I didn't really, I just thought there was enough goodwill and there was enough star power and all that. I thought they definitely have a good shot of getting 10,000.
Yeah.
And I remember the day of it, watching the press conference on Twitch and kind of seeing social media, and there was a buzz. Like, you could feel it. You could feel the buzz there. And I kind of thought, maybe they're going to sell this a little bit. But I would never in a million years have predicted they were going to do it in 29 minutes. And
no.
I'm with you. No. I think all of us, you know, who kind of work in wrestling or do stuff in wrestling, like, we couldn't be happier for those people that they've been able
Definitely,
to do that.
Definitely, absolutely. And this is good for the business. And whatever's good for the business, you know, I applaud that and I welcome that, you know. Oh, just one other thing. You were just talking about promotions that never drew 10,000 fans. TNA and Impact Wrestling have never drawn 10,000 fans either. And they've been going, what is it, 16 years next month?
Yeah, 16. And I was going to ask you, I mean, I know you probably don't have it to hand, but do you know roughly what their biggest crowd was? Did they not do, like...
I think they did about 8,100 in London? I believe that was their biggest ever audience.
Because I'm sure I remember something about when they did Bound for Glory, that they did, like, how many people? I'm sure they did, let me try and find it here. They did Bound for Glory in a big arena somewhere, maybe 2009 or something. I could be wrong. Wait, I'm trying to find this, but I'm probably going to be...
I'm pretty sure the largest audience they drew was at the London leg of, it could have been their second UK tour. And Kurt Angle was definitely on it. I think they drew about 8,000 fans to Wembley Arena, I believe it was.
Yeah, you could be, I was just looking at, I think the event I was talking about is actually in the same building that All In is going to be in. TNA ran the Sears Centre in Illinois for Bound for Glory in 2008, and the attendance was thought to be between 5,000 and 5,500.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And was the one that Sting and Samoa Joe headlined. So, yeah, great news. I do want to speak to Samoa Joe. I want to read out a little quote that he's said in an interview, which has got some people talking, and I wanted to get your take on it, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay, so Samoa Joe recently spoke to popculture.com, and he was asked about, you know, the WWE raiding independent promotions around the world and signing up their established stars. And here's what Joe had to say. Hey, you know whose fault it is that your favourite wrestler got bought out? The company he was working for, because they were too cheap to pay him for what he was worth. So he should get paid what he's worth. And if WWE comes and pays him what he's worth, that's on your sorry ass. Get the money right and start paying these dues. There are too many crazy talented dudes out there that aren't getting paid, and if you have a problem with WWE making those dudes rich, you can kiss my ass. Because those dudes deserve to be rich because they're talented as hell. It's funny because people are like, oh, that's kind of messed up. No, no, that's how you win. That's why WWE is the number one company in the world. You go out there and you get the best dudes. Don't get mad at a tiger for being a tiger. So he's kind of the first former independent wrestler, I guess, to kind of say, no, you, like to almost kind of say, well, it's, if they're not getting paid well in the Indies, they should go to WWE. And obviously WWE are willing to offer a lot more money. What do you make of what he says?
I mean, you can't really, I'm sure some people didn't appreciate the way he phrased it because it was very blunt, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. He didn't sugarcoat it.
You know, but he's basically saying that it's all about the money, which is the way it is for most people in wrestling. Not everyone, but most people in wrestling. And if WWE offers somebody more money, then they're going to take the money. I think the reason people probably find that comment a bit insensitive is that there's obviously lots of smaller promotions cannot afford to pay people anywhere near the sort of money that WWE can, because it's just simply a question of profit and loss, isn't it? And income versus outgoings. And if your live gate is $15,000 and your talent budget is, say, $4,000, and that's got to be split between, say, 12 guys, I mean, you know, do the mathematics. You're only going to be able to pay your top guy, what, $600-$700 maybe? Maybe $1,000, and then the rest will get paid a much smaller share of the talent budget. So there's literally not the funds there for many promotions to pay people huge money, whereas WWE, because it's got all these revenue streams, can afford to pay people, can afford to pay people seven figures. So I kind of get where Samoa Joe's coming from, and he's just sort of saying, well, you know, this is the way it is. You know, this is business. And, you know, this is why WWE signs these deals and makes the money it makes. You know, it's not only so it can pay the talent well, so it can obviously be more successful and the stock price goes up and the people who run the company make more money and everything and blah, blah, blah. But there is still a trickle-down effect to some extent where the company does well and the talent do well also. You know, you go back to the dark days of 94, 95, and you had like mid-card players who were making, you know, $150,000 a year or less than that, and from which they had to deduct their road expenses. And when you actually took everything out, they were making hardly any money at all. I mean, the money was terrible, really, when you think of what they went through. And when you think of, this was WWF, the so-called biggest company in the world. These guys were international stars. And when everything had been deducted, they were probably making, you know, $40,000, $50,000 a year for a job that you obviously can't do until you're 60. So, you know, you look at WWE now, if you're making great money there, then good for you. And really, for most people in wrestling, that is the goal, to get there, to make the big money, to get the merchandise deals, to get the video game deal, to get this, that, and the other, and all these different ways of making money while you're there, and also making money after you leave. So, you know, I can understand why people probably felt that it was an insensitive comment to make, but he's just really laying out the way business is in a rather undiplomatic way.
But I also think it's, there's a couple of things that are worth mentioning, and I kind of need to be careful sometimes what I say, but like, I think from his point of view, and a lot of wrestlers, I mean, if you look at a guy like Shinsuke Nakamura, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realise that he's physically not able to do the things that he used to do. So he went to WWE, and because in your mid-30s, you want to get the big money while you can. You want to get as many big years as you can. So from talent's perspective, I totally understand it. Now, just to give Samoa Joe my take on it as a promoter, I'm not going to name names, but it was someone who came to me in the last few months and had mentioned about me doing a tour with somebody, a very big name in wrestling. No, it's not Steve Austin or The Undertaker, which is the usual question that I get asked. But it was a big name in wrestling, and they was kind of like, you know, do you want to do some shows? And I was like, yeah, I'd absolutely love to do some shows. But the person had been in the UK before, and I happened to know what they had been paid before, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, I'm happy to pay them what they got paid the last time they were here. And I was then told that the talent wanted double what they had got before.
Wow.
And the reason for that is that there's other promoters who will pay somebody well above what the market value is because, you know, they either have more money to put up against the wall or maybe they're running a... You know, because when I do a show, I'm just betting on the one person. That's all I'm betting on. Whereas if you run a wrestling show, you know, you can pay more to one person, less to somebody else, you can maybe make it work. But for me, I can't. So, you know, as much as sometimes I may be like, well, you know, Kenny's not giving me what I'm due. Well, no, it's not that. It's just that if you're the only person I'm betting on and it's my money that's betting on you, you're not under any risk and I'm under all the risk. So for me, I have to be confident enough in doing that that I would be able to at least, you know, not be in the red.
Well, yeah, you want to cover your cost, don't it? I mean, if the business doesn't cover its cost, then the business doesn't exist unless it's got some, you know, backer behind it that doesn't mind losing money. And how many of them... How many of those people are there out there? There are people out there, but a business that has longevity has to be financially successful, and that means paying people what it can afford to pay them.
I mean, if you look at Five Star Wrestling, you know, they were paying huge money to everybody, but it was, you know, the guy who backed that. I mean, I wouldn't even like to speculate on how much money that guy lost.
Yeah, I gave some numbers. I mean, I think the numbers were fantastic. I mean,
you're talking six figures.
Yeah,
you're talking big money, and but it's a shame because sometimes you get people who don't know wrestling, and they take the word of somebody who says they do know wrestling. Like for me, I could not sleep at night if I lost somebody six figures. Like I wouldn't be able to function. So. But anyway, so I just thought Samoa Joe's thing was quite interesting and worth bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why people might be upset about it and that he just said it in a very undiplomatic fashion. I mean, if you contrast that with All In, you look at the All In show, and also you look at Cody and look at Matt and Nick Jackson. We've talked about the Jackson brothers before, and we've said that there's no way those guys would work for WWE because they're making a hell of a lot more money outside it. So, and good for them, because they've made it work as true independent contractors. Obviously, if you work for WWE, you class as an independent contractor. But are you really an independent contractor? Not really. But these guys are independent. They can work for who they want. And they're running this show with Cody Rhodes and other people, of course. And they're going to have this huge gate. They're going to be selling tons of merchandise on the night. I mean, this is going to be a huge moneymaker for them. And you would hope that everyone on the show is going to be paid accordingly and is going to be paid commensurate with the amount of money that's come in because it's been a very, very successful show. So you would hope that would be passed on in some regard, and I'm sure it will be. But that's it. It's, I mean, if you know, this is the way it was back in the territory days where guys would set up their own promotions or their own territories and run them and make money out of them and then pay the guys, and the more money they made, then the more guys would be paid. So, I mean, that was the way it was back then. And you sort of look at the All In show and you think that's a modern equivalent of that. And good for them that they're in this position where they're the ones calling the shots. You know, Samoa Joe's saying, well, pay the guys properly. These guys, Cody, Matt, Nick Jackson, are the ones who can decide. They're in that position. And that's really the dream, you know, of being truly independent and truly able to make your own decisions and do what you want to do. And they're in a tremendous position right now, and you know, good for them and good for everyone who works for them.
So there you go. So it has been a full year now that we've been doing this podcast, and we're going to move over to the Overrun in a second and do more. But Finn, I just want to say thank you to you because you took a chance on coming to Inside the Ropes when you didn't have to. You were already a grizzled veteran who had your legacy all set out, and you came on here and potentially could have had it shat on by me, and that's not happened. So I think that's a successful first year.
Who says it hasn't happened? No, well, thanks very much for having me, Kenny. Thanks for bringing me on board. And yeah, it's great. We've been doing this a year. And, you know, I hope people enjoy the podcast. I hope the podcast can grow from here in terms of audience and also in terms of the way we do it. You know, every week I have a little podcast post-mortem and I say, well, wow, how can I make that better? And where did I go wrong? And, you know, certainly, hopefully people don't think I rest on my laurels and take anything for granted, because I certainly don't. So I'm very excited each time we record and look forward to doing different things each episode and certainly in the future. As you said earlier, we're going to be doing the Sunday Night Heat review. I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to be doing the King of the Ring review, aren't we?
So Finn is actually coming down to London for night two of the UK Championship tournament. So we're going to be there surveying the landscape, Finn, surveying what's going on in the UK. So we'll be doing a big review of that, because I know you'll be watching the first night. You'll be watching the first show, and then you'll be there at the second one. We can kind of unpack it all afterwards for that week's podcast. So that should be good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And then also, that's pretty much it. So patreon.com/insidetheropes is where you can go to get extra content, whether it's pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, articles from Finn, the Power Slam overrun. You get the Power Slam podcast 24 hours early. There's tons of stuff. But Finn,
that's right. I'm actually in the process of writing my first Q&A for the Patreon department. So that'll be going up early next week.
But where can people go if they want to find you, see a picture of your face, or buy one of your lovely ebooks, which interviews or the whole story of Power Slam? Where can they go to get all that good stuff?
I'm sure people know already. It's finleymartin.co.uk. My Twitter is @finleymartin or @powerslamonline. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 or @inside_theropes. They're also go to the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/insidetheropes. We'll have some stuff going up over the next couple of days or week or so with Daniel Bryan. And we also got a chance to sit down and interview WWE SmackDown Live Women's Champion Carmella. And I think what you'll find with the Carmella interview, which I thought was pretty interesting, was I think that you can tell that she really is... She feels the criticism that is on her for her in-ring ability. And that's something that you can see kind of shines through in the interview, which I thought was quite fascinating, you know, as she would kind of skirt back to that if we were talking about something else. So she, you know, she's very aware of it, but she it was a great interview and, you know, a big character, big personality. So she's going to be on the channel as well, doing some stuff. And that's pretty much it. I'm going to head off. And next week, obviously, is Chris Jericho. So you can get your tickets. I think there's literally like single digit number of tickets left in Glasgow for standing general admission. And last standing in London are available insidetheropes.co.uk/Chris Jericho. Manchester is sold out. We've had to turn people away.
Wow.
For
very impressive, Kenny. Very impressive indeed.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So we're going to go do the overrun, folks, and we'll be back next week. And remember, if your friend invites you to a dance event, make an excuse.
Oh yes, I'll keep my review brief next week.
I can't wait. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.